Coming up on Tech News Today, Equifax didn't patch, and that's why we all lose. Also, Facebook sold anti-Semitic ad categories to people looking for them. Google announced the date for its next Pixel event. Apple 10 fans have a Notch hangover, and Bitmoji gets all AR in Snapchat. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1853, recorded Thursday, September 14th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we read the tech news.
Yeah.
We absorb it into our pores. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do.
And then we create art with it.
we throw it against the wall and it splatter paints everywhere.
Right.
And then we frame it and we sell it for the highest bidder.
Yeah. I was trying to think of something that went along with pores. So maybe we sweat it out.
Yeah. Let's.
And you get to wipe it from our forehead.
There we go. It's an analogy everyone can appreciate.
Shall we get to the sweating?
Let's
okay,
do it.
Good. Equifax finally updated its site to explain how the company was hacked. They say criminals took advantage of the Apache Struts CVE 2017-5638 vulnerability.
Oh, I know that one.
I know. Ars Technica says this bug was fixed back in March, but Equifax had not updated its web application. So now 143 million people's data is out there because Equifax failed to update between the time of the fix in March and the time they were breached in May. Experian, another Equifax-type company, also relies on Apache Struts. They apparently had updated theirs, or so we hope that they had. So I think it's hard to not call this negligence at this point. They really should have updated. Krebs also said, we didn't talk about this yesterday, but Equifax, Krebs on Security, mm-hmm. Brian Krebs, said Equifax, they had the credit report dispute website, and the one in Argentina had the very secretive and complicated username as admin, and the password was admin. That's no good. And so the Apache thing has been going around since over the weekend. An article in Quartz said that this was a 9-year-old vulnerability that Apache hadn't fixed, but they had. This was something they'd fixed. They posted the update, ready for anyone to take it. But Equifax was like, meh.
Yeah, Equifax obviously just doesn't care very much about anything. Because it's sloppy, it's infuriating, especially when you consider the level of data and the amount of data that was that's now out there in the open as a result of this negligence. I mean, who's to hold them accountable? And I think that's what we're more and more what we're starting to see, and I'm hoping kind of comes out of this is some sort of official form of accountability when you're talking about, you know, companies that are trading in this valuable data. Because, I mean, you know, if all they end up getting is, well, dang, we messed up anyways, whatever, and us as customers just kind of have to deal with the fact that our lives are more complicated for years to come as a result of it, like, it feels unfair, obviously. So hopefully there's some accountability there. But that's one component, right, is the vulnerability. The other aspect of this is, of course, the fact that the data was accessible, unencrypted, ripe for the picking once they got through. But it's kind of like, I suppose, once you're inside of those protections, that's just the way it is. It's just there's a million different ways that it probably could have been protected a whole lot better than it was. And not updating for 2 months beyond that patch is a pretty big no-no. You don't do that if you're managing this type of data, especially. But in general, you don't do that.
Scooter X just posted a piece in the chat room from Craig Krebs that was apparently posted recently saying that that the Equifax hackers stole 200,000 credit card accounts. I guess Visa and MasterCard are sending out confidential alerts to financial institutions. And the ones that Brian was able to see said that that the hackers initially breached Equifax starting in November of 2016. But Equifax says that they were all stolen at the same time between mid-May. So, yeah, this is news that I'm sure Leo will be reporting more on the screensavers. Or tomorrow, you will be. It's not Friday. I think it's Friday. We'll probably mention this again. Mm-hmm. The investigation is obviously ongoing.
I know. This Equifax thread just continues giving and giving, and I don't want to take any more. But, hey, what can you do? Facebook is feeling the heat, to put it lightly. First, there's the Russian inquiry that aims to determine to what degree Russian campaigns were able to utilize Facebook's ad mechanism to stir unrest in the United States ahead of the presidential election last year. Some of those ads called on citizens to organize in real life on U.S. soil, and sources inside Facebook say there were other events that haven't hit the light of day yet, other events like that. Facebook won't reveal those, though, saying it violates their own internal policies. And, you know, this gets to something that we've also been talking about. Well, speaking of accountability, the U.S. Federal Election Commission is considering regulatory changes that would require companies like Facebook, like Alphabet, that are selling ads of this type to disclose in some way who paid for those ads, which is something that they're not required to do right now. So those rules might at some point be changing, considering all this.
It's crazy that Facebook is the one doing this investigation at first. Like, they're the ones that came up with it. I mean, Democratic Commissioner Ellen Weintraub, this story says, said, "We know that foreign nationals are placing political ads because Facebook has told us." Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's where the commissioners are getting their information from, Facebook. And it's good that Facebook is revealing this. I wish they would reveal more. They call it, you know, intellectual property, because, you know, it's just so different than, you know, the way a newspaper would work, or where mm-hmm. the way a television station would work. Like, the technology is not proprietary. Right. Their ad buying and selling is not proprietary. So, yeah, it is a mess.
Yeah, it's a complicated mess. You also have this. You have the fact that Facebook's algorithms allowed for those who were buying ad campaigns to target ad categories of highly offensive anti-Semitic topics that you can look up if you really want to know what they are. Facebook admits its systems can surface content that violates its standards, and it actually did remove those categories that ProPublica found. And once they reached out to them, Facebook did remove those. But, I mean, they existed for, you know, who knows how long. Categories were described in the ad console as fields of study. In many cases, the categories were so small that it wouldn't allow ProPublica to buy ads against them at first, unless they started adding more and more categories, which ultimately just ended up, you know, ProPublica, to prove the point, ended up adding from all of these different, you know, crazy offensive categories that just broadened the pool of potential, you know, recipients of those ads. And eventually they were able to buy against them. So that's kind of what that's all about. That's a lot of fun.
This is just crazy. And this, as opposed to the last story, wasn't, you know, this wasn't revealed by Facebook. Whether or not they knew before, I want to believe that they didn't know. But ProPublica, again, Julia Angwin, who has done crazy good investigations of Facebook. She's the same reporter who uncovered the ads that eventually led to the ads that were racist, basically. They were
The housing ads.
Right. You could target certain ethnic or ethnic
or target groups away from, like, yes, they weren't showing them to, mm-hmm, I think, African-Americans, Asian-Americans, and Hispanics, right, or whatever.
Which is against the law. So this is just crazy. So, like, if you look at this photograph, this screenshot that they took, it really says 2,274 people fall into the demographic group of education/fields of study, like you said, right, Jew hater. And so, yes, they say the algorithm created this, I'm guessing from headlines and things, but it's just one of those things where did no one see that except for ProPublica? Like, that is crazy to me.
Right.
Or did they just say, like, well, if someone hates Jews, that's their right to hate Jews? I mean, no one can control who, you know, hates anything.
I mean, maybe to a certain degree, it's kind of like Tay, right? It's like they set up a system. It's an algorithmic system. It's meant to be smart enough to infer certain categories based on, you know, the actions of the people who are buying ads and posting things or posting content for those ads to be paired up with. And it all comes down to the people feeding that information. You know, people fed enough of a certain type of information into Microsoft's Tay to make Tay racist.
Right. But
it's possible apparently to do that with Facebook's algorithm too.
But it's also very possible to have it not do that. I mean, that was what happened after Tay came out. There were all these people who'd been working in the chatbot space for years saying it would have been so easy for them to put something into the code that would avoid that. And they didn't. And I just feel like it should have been easy for them to put this.
By no means am I giving Facebook a pass on that by saying that. It seems like they're operating on the same terms as Microsoft was with Tay. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're right. It's completely possible to avoid this sort of thing or just to be more aware of it. You know, Facebook, how many employees do you have? Have some people whose job it is to monitor this stuff. And maybe they do, but they weren't looking at this, obviously.
Right. So, I mean, it becomes a question that we haven't really dealt with before, like, is it okay to just direct ads at white supremacists? Like, you know, what law is that breaking exactly? Yeah. Besides our just, you know, it's besides the fact that it just disgusts us.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, I imagine to a certain degree, it's probably not that good for business. Either,
no,
for Facebook,
it looks very bad. But in terms of like breaking a law, like, and you know, I mean, it's just like they were using it to target, like to get people to go to rallies and you know, to sell Nazi memorabilia and Confederate flags. I don't know. So the iPhone X. So last week, Google has confirmed October 4th. As the date for the Pixel 2 and the Pixel 2 XL, according to madebygoogle.com/askmore and a billboard in downtown Boston, the next Google-made phone will be released or at least teased before you can order the iPhone. That doesn't happen until October 27th. According to a promo video, the phone will have a better battery, more storage, and a better camera. It will also understand you better, update itself. It will be faster. It will make you look cooler.
Yeah.
It will bring you joy.
Yeah.
And so the ad was just like, you know, so many questions that why doesn't my battery last longer? Why is my phone so fragile? Why, you know, what's wrong with all the things about my phone? And apparently Google's going to fix all of them.
Well, they hope to anyways. And it's not just going to be one phone. Rumors are pointing to two different phones, similar to what we had last year, like a Pixel 2 and then a Pixel 2 XL larger device. There have been FCC application filings that have hit both from HTC, which that's expected to be the smaller of the phones made by HTC or in cooperation with HTC. The larger phone, that FCC application hit today, that's LG. And so they've got a few things going on. We've talked on this show that HTC might someday become a Google property, but it's still very interesting that they've got these two phones in the same family, but they're going with different manufacturers to help them with these two. So I'm very curious to see how that plays out. Well, you know, because this time around, or last year, they were very much the same phone, but smaller, the same phone, but larger. There was no real differentiation other than size. Mm. And this seems, you know, they're going with two different manufacturers. I think the HTC one's supposed to have the squeezable frame.
Oh.
I don't know if that ends up in the LG one because that's kind of HTC's thing. I'll be curious to see.
Well, tonight I will be staying up late or going to bed early and then waking up at midnight to order the iPhone 8.
Oh.
Which goes on sale tomorrow morning. So, and I assume that you will also get this and then we'll switch again in January. So
yeah, we could do that. I'm down for that.
If
absolutely.
There's a pink Pixel, you have to get it.
That's the one requirement. and there also might actually be other things, a Bluetooth assistant enabled headphones. We've seen some rumors about that. There's also possibly a smaller Google Home. So there's going to be a number of devices at this event likely, and actually possibly a ramp up of assistant built into devices, because we saw today the Bose Quiet Comfort 35-2 headphones. The box has leaked on these, and apparently on the box it says Google Assistant enabled and has an action button for Assistant. So this is a direction that they're probably going to go. I'm expecting that we'll hear more about this because I don't even know if these release to the public before the event. So
the first thing you said, Bluetooth headphones, like some sort of AirPod.
That's what I was thinking initially, but then I saw this and I was like, well, is this it? But it's not. It's Bose. So yeah, I think I'm guessing there's probably going to be some sort of like an AirPod, you know, ish sort of product to tie in.
I wonder how they'll improve on the AirPods because they're perfect.
I don't know. I mean, really, it's just in-ear Bluetooth headphone that works with Assistant instead of Siri. So, yeah. You know.
I mean, perfect is probably an exaggeration. They could look better.
Yeah, like I know. That little drop-down thing, I as long as I've seen it now, I'm still not used to it. Still looks weird to me. But that's just me. The thrill is gone now that people are beginning to see the notch in the display of the iPhone X and what it means for apps and games running on the device. Though it's absolutely early days for the notch, it hasn't taken long for people to post examples of the compromises that a notch in the display might bring to the premium device. One example shows how the scroll bar on the side of a page plunges into darkness as the user scrolls down the web page. That scroll bar just disappears entirely in the hole that's left there by the notch. And examples aplenty showing how movies, TV shows, video games look while sporting a dead zone that cuts into UI elements on some games and other on-screen footage and stuff. Although, if you're taking screenshots with your iPhone X, the device actually does eliminate the notch in screenshots. So it's full, so you get more visual information with a screenshot than you actually see on the screen. So there's that.
So wouldn't it be cool to have like a game where like there was a secret hidden behind the notch and then you have to take a screenshot to see it?
Ooh, hey, you should become a developer. That's actually...
I might.
You're a developer.
I am.
You don't have to become one. You are suddenly a developer now.
So I've done a little bit of a poll on the Twitters, what to call the notch. I don't like the notch. It, you know, sounds a little bit too much like Notch, who, you know, developed Minecraft and then went crazy.
We love you, Notch.
I mean, you speak for yourself. I digress. So we could call it the ears, the chin, Steve's lament, or I have better things to do. And so far, I have better things to do is winning 71%. But 15% says ears. That's what Serenity last night called it, ears, which I think is a really a glass half full kind of situation. Because it's like ears. The ears are the fill, like the screen, instead of, you know, the notch is the chin. Oh,
you're right. It is glass half full.
It's like what you can see, not what you can't see.
Yeah, it's not that we took something out of the display. It's that we gave you a little extra on the sides.
Yeah, exactly.
That's totally what that is. You're right.
No one said chin. Not a single of the 88 people that voted said chin.
Because it's up there. When you're holding a portrait, it's up there.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
It's more for like forehead. Or maybe it's like bangs.
Yeah, bangs. Someone suggested unibrow, but I did not choose that because that was my nickname in elementary school. And it still hurts. So.
Learn something new today. to be fair, and Burke pointed this out, but it's a good reminder, the notch view for video is optional. By default, apparently, it shows black bars. So basically, the notch, or whatever you want to call it, goes away.
Ears.
Which looks normal, which looks fine. If you double tap, you get immersive mode, and that expands it out. But really what you're getting there, like, yes, you see the notch on the side, but you're also cropping because it's taking a normal, you know, ratio and expanding it to fit. So information on the top and bottom is also cropping out too. So personally, I don't know why I would ever do that. Mm-hmm. But some people like to fill up every single pixel on their screen. So maybe that's it. And if you are a bangs or notch or whatever you want to call that fan, you can install the YouTube Notch Mode extension on desktop. And all of your YouTube videos on your computer will now show a side notch. So you could like live the future.
I think that I'm going to go out on a limb and say the iPhone X is going to be the only one with a notch. They're going to figure it out before with iPhone 11 or iPhone 9 or whatever is next.
Well, I mean, that's the question, right? Like, would it have been better for them to not have that there? Like I saw a render. Someone was like, I don't like the look of the new iPhone because of that. And so I, you know, just extended, got rid of the screen there and this is what the iPhone would have looked like if they just had done normal bezel. And it still looked pretty slick. Mm-hmm. Like, it looked actually pretty nice. So, I get, you know, people are probably going to fall on either side of the, you know, either camp. And I bet you anything, usually in the case of something like this, once it actually gets out into people's hands and they see it in person, it becomes less of a thing than you thought it was going to be when you saw it online.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I was worried about the Essential with the little camera cutout. And mind you, compared to this, it's pretty small. Mm-hmm. It's not as wide of a bar. But when I got it in person, it really didn't interfere. It didn't bug me.
It had other problems, but that wasn't.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Okay. Yes. It will drive Josh nuts. That's what Burke is saying. Burke, get your act together, Burke. Yes, Josh.
Yes. We're never going to hear the end of it.
Yeah.
Josh.
I mean, that's what Leo said, too. It's going to drive his OCD crazy. So I wanted to talk about Face ID FUD, which is going on a lot. Uh-huh. You know, just people like, we're going to, it's going to open. My children are going to be able to open it. It's going to open anytime you put the phone anywhere near me. And so remains to be seen when people get the phone. In terms of like having a police officer make you do it, Craig Federighi said today, gripping the buttons on both sides of the iPhone will automatically turn it off. So
it'll disable the face unlock thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then force you to enter in your PIN.
Yeah, I don't know in what situation, like if a police officer forces you. I mean, I don't think Craig Federighi said it's for this, but if a police officer says, open your phone.
If you absolutely had to give your phone to someone and you didn't want them to have the ability to get inside your phone by unlocking with your face, just do that on the sides. Yeah. Which, I mean, didn't the older iPhones, you could tap the home button like 5 times and it would force a PIN, the Touch ID would disable and
something
you would force
like
a PIN.
That, yeah.
Same thing here.
Yeah.
So because you don't have a Touch ID button to press, this is the alternative. Coming up, more news and some of your feedback. We have a few emails that we'll read. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage. They are the sponsor of this episode. You already know that the mortgage experience is difficult. It's a challenge. It's not keeping up with the times. At least it hasn't been. It was dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution. Well, that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. It allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's also powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or heck, maybe even your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. Based on your income, your assets, your credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify, does all the heavy lifting for you, and then find the one that's just right for you so you can take a look and act. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/TNT. That's rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. So we've waited a really long time for the mythical unicorn known as Magic Leap to finally release their premier computing device to the public, wearable computing device. So what's another 6 months, right? Seriously, we can wait even more. Multiple sources say that's about how long it should take for the mixed reality company to finally bring its much-awaited headset to test with a small group of users. Not even a public release, like finally to test with a small group of users. Sources also say that the headset is expected to cost between $1,500 to $2,000. The form factor is more like a large pair of glasses than it is like a big honking headset like we're used to seeing with Oculus and with Vive. So I know, Megan, you are waiting with bated breath for Magic Leap and all that it promises, and you're willing to plunk down $2,000 for one.
Not quite. I think the first time I heard of Magic Leap, I think I interviewed someone from MIT Technology Lab or something who had seen it, one of the many journalists who've seen it, like journalists we know and trust, who've seen it and said, this is amazing. It's going to change everything.
Yeah.
And that was when I first started back here, like almost 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, the world has changed of augmented reality. The world has changed and people have actually, I mean, we're going to talk about the amazing things that that Snapchat is doing with augmented reality. We're going to talk about that later in the show. There's so, you know, I'm not going to pay $2,000 for this. I just want the mystery solved. Is it nothing? They've raised much money. I mean, they've raised a crazy amount of money. $1.3 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, they've raised it from Google and other people that you would trust. And it just doesn't, it continues to boggle the mind.
Yeah. They're looking to add another $500 to that for evaluation. $500 million. Like,
let's give them $500.
Hey, you know what? Magically.
Yeah.
I got you. I got you. No, I don't have $500 in my wallet. What am I talking about? For a valuation of $6 billion. And yeah, like you said, we've still not even seen a single piece of their technology. They put out a couple of promotional videos here and there that purport to show the actual experience. And I more or less believe it to a certain degree. But you're right. So much has changed in the last 2 or 3 years in augmented reality. What was a wow factor 3 years ago might not be so wowful anymore. Mm-hmm. By the way, some other pieces from this, the technology would require the user to wear this portable puck-shaped device while using the glasses. It would wirelessly transmit the information, the processing, and that sort of stuff up to the glasses. And I'm very, very interested. What do you think the over-under is on being disappointed after all of this buildup?
I think that I am already disappointed. Well, the other thing, remember like when their CEO said that the HoloLens caused cancer? Like, it's also like it's not just the fact that we haven't seen anything. They're a little bit kooky over there.
They're a little too aware of how in the dark everyone is, right? And like, they love it.
And but, they're in Florida. So, I mean, I hope everything's okay with them.
See, it's interesting though, because now when you watch this video, so this is one of the earlier videos that you saw that you were like, wow, that's amazing. Now the table crossing in front of the image, that is pretty cool. But some of this stuff, like, yeah, you can do this with a phone right now, yeah, with like AR kit or, mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I guess the real difference is that this is supposedly relies on light field technology, similar to Lytro. And we know the visible effects of that are actually pretty interesting. Not to mention in a glasses state, that's what I feel like is kind of missing from mobile AR right now. True. Is the fact that you have to hold your phone out and that gets tiring. And I've said repeatedly, like, if I could just put that into glasses and do this, what I'm doing with my hands, but with my eyes, it would be awesome. And that seems to be what Magic Leap is promising.
But HoloLens does that right now, right?
HoloLens does, but it has a very narrow field of view through which to look. It's not like this thing that surrounds you everywhere. It's like you're looking through this little window in your goggle, which is cool, but, you know, in a perfect world, it would encompass your entire view. And I don't know if Magic Leap will do that, but I expect it'll be better than HoloLens as far as that's concerned.
And you think it's going to be better than what I can do right now with my Bitmoji?
Well, we will see when we talk about that in a little bit. But we're not talking about Bitmoji right now. We're going to talk about Samsung. It doesn't want to be left in the dust of other companies ramping up their autonomous vehicle efforts. So the company launched the $300 million Samsung Automotive Initiative Fund to put its money behind interesting startups in the market and align itself with them. Along those lines, it invested $90 million into TT Tech, along with Audi. Audi and TT Tech have a relationship already. The strategic partnership with TT Tech will focus on safety technology for Audi's self-driving car initiatives, and specifically its piloting program on the Audi A8, at least initially. TT Tech says they plan to use the Samsung investment to just basically improve their technology for the Volkswagen Group. And they really focus on functional safety, networking, real-time systems. They say complex software integrations, and Samsung just kind of wants its chips to be part of that and wants to be in on it. So they've invested a lot of money into it.
I mean, this technology is the most interesting to me of all the technologies that we talk about, self-driving cars. So I mean, it's real. It's happening. It's something that's going to save lives. It's something that is going to make, you know, our current lives easier. And I'm much more excited about this, an autonomous driving fund. Sounds pretty great. And we've moved really, if you think about how fast we've moved in self-driving car technology. It's pretty amazing. I listened to Kara Swisher had an interview with Chris Urmson, who used to run Google self-driving car project. Mm-hmm. And he was just talking about the very beginning when they did like the DARPA Grand Challenge, and the cars were flipping over and everything, that long ago. And, having my Bitmoji dance around on your desk is amazing. But this is the kind of technology that I think is really going to change our lives in a good way.
Yeah, eventually. Samsung, by the way, this isn't like their first outing. Sorry, I got a groan from Burke. That was an accomplishment. In self-driving technology, they actually acquired Harman last November. That was for $8 billion. And Harman, of course, that was for connected car strategy. They're in auto. They're in audio products as well. But it's all kind of coming together for Samsung. Samsung likes to be where all this stuff is, and they don't want to be left in the dust. So there you go.
And Ken Stone in the chat room says there's an insurance issue with self-driving cars. There are so many issues. There's ethical issues with self-driving cars. I'm not saying they're going to be everywhere anytime soon, but starting in the cities, I think they're going to be really helpful in terms of environmental issues and all that. There's going to be a lot of things we have to get through first.
Yep.
We got some feedback from Wayne about the story yesterday that we talked about with the startup called Bodega, which was little kiosks in dorm rooms and different places. And mostly the story was how it blew up on Twitter because of the appropriation of the name Bodega. But Wayne writes, I don't see Bodega as much of a threat to the mom and pop stores and not really an issue. Most bodegas make the majority of their profits selling alcohol. I don't see this happening with the vending machine bodegas selling candy, chips, pop, and deodorant won't cause the mom and pop bodegas to disappear. These will work best in cities that don't have stores or bodegas near enough to businesses to make this desirable and convenient for employees. And I did some research to try to figure out if that was accurate, that bodegas really do make most of their money off of alcohol. And I cannot confirm or deny that that is true. But I did think about what part of what we talked about yesterday was, the only thing, bodegas are competing with Amazon still, because there's a lot of things that we just say like, I need this right now. Mm-hmm. I have to have it. Or you walk by a store and you're thinking, oh, look, that looks good. And a lot of times that is alcohol or cigarettes or Twinkies or things that you take care of yourself a little bit when you're shopping on Amazon, and you might not order all that stuff. You can't order that stuff from Amazon. But, when I'm ordering things from future Megan and future Megan's family, they're often very healthy, as opposed to the things that, when I walk by a bodega or a corner store or a greengrocer or whatever the names that your town and culture call them. It's not always the healthiest choices.
I never knew what a bodega was until this story. I just always called them corner stores, but then that was my time in San Francisco. My time in San Francisco, at least the early days in San Francisco, filled with corner stores. I basically lived in a corner store. Not really.
Well,
kind of.
I think that it's really a New Yorker thing.
Okay.
It was one of those really fascinating times on Twitter when everyone is just like, no.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I saw. It was upheaval to the nth degree. For
yeah.
Sure. Brian Haley writes, why are we expecting so much from self-driving cars when they are in their infancy? Probably because of movies like Demolition Man, iRobot, and even going back to the cartoon The Jetsons. I think the expectations are too high right now. This technology is still in development. Yes, it would be nice to set it and forget it, but at this time, we need to treat it like a teen driver that just got their license. Cinch up the seatbelt, check your mirrors 3 times, and be ready to grab the wheel when they make a stupid move, as you know they will. How do you feel about that, Miss? I love self-driving cars.
Well, that's kind of what I was saying. Like, I probably am expecting. I mean, that's probably directed directly at me, who I'm saying, we need a self-driving Burke is what we need.
I think that was a previous story.
Or self-driving TD. I don't know what we need, but
autonomous.
Yes. Put on your seatbelt, Kevin.
All right. TNT's fan of the day is William, who says, loading trucks, digging a high-rise basement in downtown LA, streaming through Bluetooth, and looking over at my phone every now and then when it's safe. This is how I consume all the Twit Network shows. Always starts off with TNT. Nice. It's like, I feel like I'm there. I'm this guy.
I need to know, William, when is it safe to watch while you have that giant crane? Like, please tell me. Like, when taking a break or... I don't know.
I think when the claw is opening and dumping and you've already got it lined over the thing. I mean, you've got like 5 seconds there while it maybe not, but okay. But you know what? I have a feeling it's probably the majority is listening.
It
seems like a pretty like interactive attention all on it sort of activity.
I really appreciate that you listen.
I did.
I really do appreciate it. But if there's anything, William, I'd love for you to email me and tell me if there's anything that upsets you or scares you or anything, because I would like to avoid all those topics knowing that you have that giant crane in your hand.
This video is kind of mesmerizing, though. How the camera is perched up on it. Like, I feel like I'm there.
I know. Like, I mean, this is a job that, I mean, I wouldn't want this job. It is very satisfying.
Yeah.
You should put this up on YouTube. People will just watch it.
I know. I can kind of watch this for a while and maybe get a little dizzy and maybe end up throwing up. But until then, it would be awesome.
That is amazing technology. We could just sit there and watch this. Thank you, William.
Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. You can post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it. William posted this on Google+ and then emailed it to us saying, we don't check Google+ enough, and it's true. I've got an alert on Twitter, so it's really easy to get the Twitter ones because they just kind of come into my tweet deck. Anything else like Facebook, Instagram, Google+, I have to like remember to go in there and search specifically and then filter through a bunch of old things to find the new things. So it takes a little bit more work. So I end up getting to them late. So I apologize, William, that sat in there for a little while.
Well, as I've said already several times during this show, I finally have found a use case for augmented reality. It's the 3D Bitmoji in Snapchat. Snapchat, of course, owns Bitmoji. And so now your animated character, your Bitmoji, if you don't already know, is basically a better and cooler version of you. You create it, you give it clothes, hair, whatever. You decide its size, facial hair, all those things. And then now it can hang out in your real life. And you just open up Snapchat and try it with the front-facing camera. That's what it works, not the selfie camera. And I did that with Jason before the show. And
what did your Bitmoji do?
What my Bitmoji? Well, I posted it on Twitter so you could look at it, but I played guitar, I drank coffee. That's not my Bitmoji. But here's my Bitmoji. Oh, my Bitmoji's doing yoga. You can't see. Only I can see.
Your augmented reality is so much better than our augmented reality.
There it is, playing a little guitar on your hand.
On my hand. Oh, okay.
See, it sort of moved around with your hand. I don't know, actually, if it follows that much. But
it jumped at the right time.
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of hovering there, though. Yeah. Could be a coincidence.
It'll probably
improve with ARKit, right?
I'm guessing. I mean, it's no Snapchat hot dog, but it's
what is.
Do you have a Bitmoji yet?
I did the Bitmoji thing quite a while ago. I think actually I haven't checked in on it in a really long time. Probably since before they bought them. But
do you get to decide the height of your Bitmoji? I don't know if you could. I don't remember that as being an issue.
So. I don't know if you get to like pick it exactly, but I think you get to like pick like this, like if you're tall and slender and stuff like that. Yeah. I think so.
I don't know. Really, this is.
I usually overemphasize that if I have the ability to, because it's true.
I make myself tall too.
Yeah.
Because it's true.
TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
Have you subscribed to our show? If you haven't, go to twit.tv/TNT subscribe. And until someone tells me that there is a law against taking someone's phone and subscribing to them, tell me if there's a law against that. Because people don't always know what they need, and they need to subscribe to TNT.
Yeah.
Subscribe for yourself and your friends. And if you want to tweet at me about said law that I don't know about, I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to Kevin, our editor and technical director for the day. Guessing, but I think that's right. Josh is still in Japan, so there we go. Whew. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio, and I hope you had a really good lunch. And thanks to everyone watching and listening today. Thank you so much for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.